stiff arm. Gore cuts it inside. Frank Gore is still going. Touchdown, San Francisco.
Two from the 40, couple of tight ends, receiver right and Adrian. Hand off Adrian. Scoots loose up the middle. Across the 30, to the 20, inside the 10. Touchdown!
First down and 10, Johnson. Gets a shoulder square. Watch out! He's got getting away from the top speed. Touchdown!
Welcome in to Grinding the Edge, episode number 36 here on South Harmon. I'm your host, Koopa. You can find me on X at Dynasty Koopa, and you can also find me on Discord at KoopaTroopa8. If you've not gone to check out the tools at southharmonff.com, you need to go and do that. I'm going to be talking about those somewhat again this week, although this week is going to be a little bit lighter on the data side of things, as much as talking about some of the higher level things that I do and using some data to back up why those work. So if you want to get access to the same tools that I'm going to be talking about, I'll heavily be talking about the simulator today. Go to southharmonff.com and check out the warp tool in the simulator. You can also go to warp.life if you want to go that way, and that will take you to the same place. What I want to talk about is some general concepts of how did I do as a manager over the course of this season. The way I'm going to evaluate that is by using the simulator. If you remember back towards the beginning of the season, I went through all of my teams with the simulator, and I talked about which teams I was trying to push forward and get into the first or second seed buys, and which ones I was going to say, you know what, I'm going to punt anyway, and I'm just going to take this team and completely re-roll it for next year, starting now, all the way back in August, when I could get the most value for my players. So now I'm at the end of the season. We are now at the point where we have 1 week left until playoffs. And I wanted to run back through the simulator and see how my teams are doing. Theoretically, I should be doing just as well in terms of my money expectation from the beginning of the year till now. If I'm a good manager, that number might be a little bit higher. If I'm a worse manager, that number would be lower. And so my money expectation when I was all the way back in August, it was $1,676.25. Now, it is $2,273.55. How did that happen? Well, let's go through and pay attention to some of the broader strategies. I talked about just last week on my podcast right here, revisiting the first seed and second seed issue and saying, I want to make sure that I have first and second seed in as many leagues as possible. Well, when I went through this analysis all the way back in August, I had two leagues where I was the first seed, and I had an additional five where I was the second seed. Now, I am at the point where I have four leagues that are in that first place, and I have an additional five that are in that second. And then I have a couple others that I'm hoping can make their way into second. I have two that are in third, and yes, I do need a little bit of help, but I think it is reasonable that those leagues might be able to get into that second place and a first round bye. And that is a huge factor in why my money expectation is higher for this point in the year versus at the beginning of the year. In addition to the fact that at the beginning of the year, I had fewer teams that were that first round bye landing in first or second place, you also had to deal with the fact that it included variance. It was not locked in that any of these teams would finish first or second place. Well, now that is true. Now I am at the point that my teams are in first or second place. And so I am able to solidify those payouts to being that expectation that is more than double that of being in third place. An example of that, I have one league where I am full on 24-2. I have been dominating the entire year. The next highest team has 18 wins. And at the beginning of the year, I was expected to dominate. I was expected to be place number one, and that was giving me a money expectation of $148 off of a $50 league. Now, that expectation is $269, and that is mostly to do with the fact that I have that first seed locked up. I cannot lose out that first round of playoffs. Even if I manage to lose the semifinals, I still have the chance to get $50 back and keep up with the dues of this league. Whereas, if I was potentially finishing in third, I was going to end up in that situation of, I'm just out first round of playoffs, I get nothing. And then I make the second round, then I still need to win that, and then win again in the very last round in order to get those big money payouts. It's winning those three games in a row that is quite difficult. And that's difficult in a lineup league. In best ball, if you listen to the 40 Chess podcast from this week, where Mike was talking about in best ball leagues, how it's even harder to overcome where you're at a lower seed disadvantage, that is 100% a problem when you're trying to come up from outside of those top two seeds. Those top two seeds, they go into the playoffs, not only because their team just has good players, but in best ball, your roster construction plays such a huge role that those teams are going to have the roster constructions that if that one player gets hurt, they're going to slot in somebody that is going to score almost the same number of points into their lineup. You're not going to end up going up against somebody who has horrible luck, just take them out of contention. Instead, you're going against teams that have a full depth style to them, that they don't just have two quarterbacks, they have three or four. They don't just have three wide receivers, they probably have 12. They don't just have three running backs, they have a whole stable of seven or eight guys that are going in on a weekly basis. Those weeks where you would normally see in a lineup league that random tight end that is on somebody's bench that goes off for four catches for 60 yards and gets two touchdowns, well, that's now in your opponent's lineup against you. And all these teams that are roster constructed around that have a better chance at winning when it comes to playoffs. And that is something that I do with my teams, and that is a major factor as well in how these teams are in terms of overall production and where they're at this point in the season. An example of this, when I was back in August, I had a league, I don't want Melon Butt, that my money expectation was only $35. It is a $25 due league. And at this point in the year, I am expected to make $102 because I am that much of a favorite based on how I've adjusted my roster construction over the course of this season. Some of that has been spending some draft capital that I had. I had a little bit of extra draft capital coming into the season, which is not accounted for by the simulator. And some of that is just making the right moves on waivers over the course of the season. I've gone through and been aggressive on the waiver wire and have gotten some of those top pickups. I have Foster Moreau right now, which I'll be talking about later on in the Tight Ends Don't Matter segment, why I want him for the rest of this year. I also picked up Will Disley off waivers, who's been doing great for me, and I've even made a couple trades that have gotten me better players. Now I have the tight ends of Travis Kelce and George Kittle regularly hitting my tight end spot and my flex spot every single week. And then behind them, I still have David Njoku and TJ Hawkinson. I'm leaning heavily into the tight ends in this league, and it is working out quite well because scoring setting wise, we do have bonus receiving points for tight ends. They get 2 points per reception. So obviously those matter. And it's playing into the warp, playing into, hey, what do other people value in this league? And I've managed to get myself to a point where I still have 225 firsts on my team. I have one from the manager who is going to end up gifting the owner of this pick the 103, which I very well might want to hold on to, and I still have my own first as well. So, as I'm looking into playoffs in this league, we don't have a trade deadline. It's one of those leagues where I'll pay attention to, do I want to spend these firsts, or do I maybe just want to take a chance at not? I'll see what happens in this first round of playoffs. We currently have our 5 seed and 6 seed going against the 3 and 4. The 3 seed, he's still kind of scary. His points four are not too far behind the two of us that are in first and second. However, the 1 and 4th, 5th, and 6th, they're pretty far away. And so I might be able to just ride the year in this league and not spend any of that capital and roll it over into future years. I might be able to just decide to run with this team and not spend anything extra out of this team and try to turn it into a true dynasty. Now, I need to do a little bit more analysis than I'm doing right here in terms of making that final decision, but that is something that you can take advantage of in your leagues as well. Is your team at the point where variance is just something that you need to ride? That no matter how much you really try, you are not going to get yourself too much extra for your team. That's what you need to pay attention to. The other thing that I did over the course of this season was take advantage of what different leagues were giving me. An example of that is in the league called the Expo. At the beginning, before the season started, it was due to basically not make me anything. The money expectation was $5 off of a $50 league. I was expected to finish an average of 10th in the standings and really just not be a factor at all in that league. Instead, where I'm at right now is I am in third place in the standings. And if either of the two teams in first or second lose this week, I will end up with a first round bye. In addition to that, the team that is in first place is going up against the team in fourth place, and the team in fourth place is projected to beat them. And so you start talking through all these things, and all I need to do is make sure that I stay ahead by points four compared to the other teams that are right around me, which I do have a lead of about 23 points over the team in first, and a lead of about 50 points over the teams in second and fourth. As long as I maintain that lead, which it's a best ball league, I should hopefully be able to do that. Then all I need to do is win my matchup, which is a cupcake kind of matchup in a best ball league, and then I'll fall into a first round bye. So the question is, how has this happened for me? How have I gone from being the 10th place team in the league all the way up to fighting for a first round bye? The first thing is that I got really lucky at the beginning of the season in terms of some of my matchups right at the beginning of the season. I just ended up scoring a ton of points. I had Joe Mixon week one, which helped me out a ton, and the rest of my team also did really well. I had Justin Fields and Lamar Jackson, and they were just rocking it out at the beginning of the season. And then I had some cupcake matchups at the right times. And then what I identified early was that my team was overperforming compared to the expectations that I had set, but that this team was not a total fraud. I had hit on some players that were doing better than expected. I had some guys that were on my team and hitting my lineup regularly that I could actually rely on, some of those being Ray McLeod. I also had Alexander Mattison. I also had Quentin Johnson. So as I started going through and being like, hey, these guys are performing better than expected from where they were projected to be before the season, I was now in a position to be able to try and push in a little bit. This is a league where we only score our head-to-head matchups. We do not have the median. So I was not as far behind as you might be in median-based leagues, where if I was consistently not hitting the median, but I was still winning my cupcake matchups, I would still not be getting ahead compared to those teams that were doing better. In addition to that, my points four was also just really high in general, and so it was at a certain point, I was actually in first in points four, despite not winning as many matchups, just because of where those points came from. And the parity in this league is quite high. As I mentioned, the points four between all the top four teams is within 50 points. In addition to that, the fifth place team is right there with everyone else and is also only 50 points behind first place, basically. They're 3 points behind the next highest. And so when you start comparing all of these teams and how close they are, the fact that I was up there kind of batting with them a little bit at the beginning of the season was the impetus for me to start by making some trades. Unfortunately for me, I got unlucky. The first trade I made was to get myself Chris Godwin. And after 4 or 5 weeks, Chris Godwin ended up going out with that season-ending injury. But because I was expecting this team to rebuild, I had actually accumulated extra draft picks. I had already accumulated 2 firsts, and so I had sent one away. I'd actually kind of jokingly, because I was in this league with Mike, the Teardown King, who you know from being on this podcast feed, I sent away my own first round pick and kept Mike's first round pick because I was making a bet at that time of year that my team was going to be better than his. Now, with at the point that we're at in the season, I just sent away my own first round pick last week. And when I did that, I was ahead of Mike in the standings, and I am still ahead of Mike in the standings right now. We have the same record, and we have a difference in points four by just under 50 points. We're 45 points four away from each other. But I've been keeping up with spending my capital at opportune times in order to put myself over the edge, in order to give myself that extra little bonus that I need, in order to maintain the production that my team needs to continue to be batting with these other teams. And that's the important thing for me. I am going through and investing at the right times. I invested earlier in the season when my team was starting to overperform compared to expectation to send it up into the same level of consistency as the top teams in the league. And now that this team has proven it can hang out there, I am reinvesting in again and making sure that my team is now in a position to try and steal that first round bye. Despite all of the parity, despite how similar all these teams are, I'm putting my team in the best possible position by holding on to that extra draft capital from earlier and spending it at the right time in order to make the most difference. And so that's just an example of something that I did. And that has happened in so many of my other leagues. I can't go through them all, but a lot of them, I have turned them in from a point where they are only going to be getting me around league dues in terms of average return, and then turn them into that first round buy. And as soon as you get to that first round buy, you're talking a 3x, 4x expectation on your league dues. And so that's how it looks like I have gotten myself so much more money over the course of the season by just being a good manager. I have set myself up in that spot where I have the flexibility, I have the draft capital, in order to spend it at the right times. Remember that the simulator does not pay attention to draft capital. It's not like if you use something like The Lab or Dynasty Daddy or Keep Trade Cut or whatever, where they incorporate in the value from your draft picks into the value of your team. Instead, the simulator's only looking at the players on your team and the projections from them. And it does that, and it does that well. And so you can play with that a little bit. You can identify, hey, this league, I understand that my expectation's a little lower, but I know that I'm in the right spot where I can then turn all this capital into the points that I need at the right time. And that's the important thing. You need to be willing to spend those third round picks to get those wide receivers who are going to have the opportunity. As soon as you saw Marquez Valdez-Scantling is going to have essentially that Rashid Shaheed role, just spend that third and take the chance. Turns out, at this point, you probably can't spend a third to go get him, because either everyone that has him wants more, or he's on a team that they just aren't even going to sell because they are competing. So taking advantage of things like that, identifying the right times, being able to push in, hey, this first round pick, well, I just had Chris Godwin go down with injury. Let me take Chris Godwin, that first round pick, and turn it around and go get another receiver who is going to, A, not be a zero, and B, take that place on my team. Maybe he won't have the ceiling that Chris Godwin did, but he'll still be somebody that's regularly slotting into a wide receiver spot in your lineup, giving you more points. So that way you aren't reliant on the variance of, if you have a bunch of guys like Tutu Atwell, Jahan Dotson, Mac Hollins, David Moore, like you're relying on those guys to have a week that's worthy of being in your lineup. Whereas if you have a player who has a higher floor that is regularly hitting your lineup, then you can just take advantage of those weeks where David Moore goes out and he gets his wonderful week of five receptions and for 81 yards and a touchdown. Those sorts of things are what you want to try and capture, but you don't want to capture the weeks where beforehand he was catching two passes for almost no yards. He's getting you a whole four or five fantasy points. You don't want to see that in a best ball lineup. And so playing to those strengths of, I have this capital, put it in at the opportune time, being able to manage your team. You don't just sit back and watch your team go and you celebrate at the end of the year or feel sad when it doesn't work out. You need to actually go through, you need to pay attention and keep track of your leagues. In my case, it might be a little bit harder than a lot of other people because I have so many leagues. I'm in the number of leagues where I was managing 48 over the course of this year. At this point, the redraft leagues where I know I'm out of contention, I'm not managing those ones anymore. So I'm down to 43. But even with 43 leagues that I'm managing, that's still a lot of managing that I need to do. And so being able to focus in on, these are the leagues that I need to compete in, recognizing these are the leagues where I'm basically out, that the majority of what I can do is really just make sure that I'm available for other teams to send me draft capital, injured players, or whatever, and I can send them players who are performing to their expectations or better. That's really all I have to do in those leagues. And so by identifying before the season started what the majority of those leagues were, I did have two get pulled out from there that I was not expecting. But everywhere else, they were all in the position of, they stayed down there at the bottom, and I helped drive them to the bottom. And that's the way you want it to be. You don't want to be having to hyper-manage every single league, especially when you're playing in a large portfolio. If there's any way you can allow the leagues to manage themselves, in this case, it was by making sure everyone knew, I will listen to offers. I will counter offers if you send them to me. I will make sure they're reasonable. I'm not going to be ridiculous and ask for insane prices. Then I was still able to make a lot of trades in these leagues where all I really did was pay attention on Tuesday night for waivers and just every once in a while respond to a trade request. That's all I needed to do. I did not spend a lot of time managing those leagues. But the thing that I have done in those is keep accumulating the value. And then this next offseason, that's when I can take time to look through every single one of those leagues and go, is now the time to try and start turning it around? Does the number of draft picks that I have, should I be making them? Should I be trying to push them off to future years? How exactly should all that work for this team? Those are the kinds of things that you as a manager, you need to understand where your strengths lie. In my case, my strengths lie, I know, in being able to take advantage of where the values are given to me. I really understand the warp tool, I really understand league formats, and I am much better than my league mates in being able to identify those players who are not good values in terms of a normal league, but are good values in this league, where people do not place a high premium on them, but they give you high premium value to your team, as long as your roster constructed around getting those players into your lineup. And so as a result, that has been my management style. And that's what everybody needs to recognize for them. Some people are really good at the trade negotiation part. They're really good at accruing value. And so if that's what you're really good at, you're going to want to build up to what a lot of people would view as a super team. But the important thing is, if you know that you're really good at accruing value passively by doing trades and things like that, when it comes time to push in and you're not as good at getting value and you just need points, you need to understand that you need the buffer of value to burn into getting those points. For me, I tend not to have that buffer of value, and I instead find points essentially out of equal value trades. And so I don't try and go overboard on the value game. I instead try to just have these teams that don't have a ton of value, but just kind of come out of nowhere in the number of points that they have. And so those different strategies play into the kind of management that you need in your leagues. And this is something that, as we're getting to the end of the season, we're going to start to transition to the offseason here soon. Even on this podcast, I'm still going to talk about some playoff stuff the next couple weeks, but I'm going to start transitioning away from, hey, this is what we want to look at for the rest of the season, because there's really not much of the rest of the season to look at, and it's all being beat to death already anyway. If you want to look at who you should be starting in your matchup championship week, you shouldn't be listening to me for that. I'm not the person that can give you that. You should be looking at the people that are really good at picking who you want to start that week. Look at the Fantasy Pros expert consensus people and pick the one that you like, or just one that's been really highly ranked. And that's what you want to do. Instead, I'm going to start to transition on to some of your broader dynasty concepts, some of the stuff that we can do to try to set ourselves up and be ahead by the time we come around to our rookie drafts, by the time we're getting towards the thick of the offseason, we're analyzing everything where the narrative from week to week is not who got hurt, who had a huge game. It's, oh, this guy's getting this buzz in camp. There's this report coming out that these two players, they're going out and eating breakfast together. Like, stuff like that. The stuff where people will overreact to the smallest thing, and we need to have a more level-headed approach. Right now, you're in the approach where level-headedness is sometimes not the answer. Sometimes you want to try and overreact because that's where you win the big bucks. It's the idea of, are you going to go all in on every single hand at the poker table? No. But when you're in a heads-up match against one other person, and it's winner takes all, if you go all in, it's much closer to a 50-50 shot of you winning the entire match right then, right there. That's where we're at in playoffs, is you're at the point of just going all in, because then you don't only need it to work once or twice. You don't need it to work a ton. Whereas if you were doing that right from week one, that can blow up in your face so quickly. You have to get right so many times in a row that it's not worth it to do it then. So I hope this is all helpful to you. I hope this is something that helps you get in that little bit of a mindset to take a step back from the rush that is right here as we're getting into playoffs and think about how you are as a manager and how you are able to bring value to your teams. To close up the show, I'm going to go through my last two segments, the players that are rostered on your standard 12-team start 10, and the tight ends don't matter segment. The players rostered, they are up by one in the quarterback department from 59 to 60, down by one in the running back department, 98 to 97, down by one in wide receivers, 138 to 137, and up by one in tight ends to 53 from 52. So what we're seeing is a little bit more into the quarterbacks and tight ends, whereas previously we were seeing a little bit of a stagnation of that. We're kind of just fluctuating up and down a little bit. This is once again kind of following the investment that people are seeing of they don't need to make large changes. There's not a ton of injuries. Last season, we saw huge changes happen because of all the quarterback injuries where people started rostering all the backups. At this point, that's not happening. We are not seeing huge changes. There's not a single position that is getting a bunch of injuries. This will be something to talk about in the offseason of how much bias there is compared to 1 year, compared to multiple years. And so that is something that will be brought up for sure. The last segment, tight ends don't matter. Last week, we got Tommy Tremble. He worked out for 5 for 8 with 77 yards. I could go with him this week. However, Jatavion Sanders appears to be practicing, at least in a limited capacity this week. And our other option, according to the waiver wire pod, is Austin Hooper. I also am going to bring up Foster Moreau. He was not mentioned in the waiver wire pod, but the reason that I want to look back at Foster Moreau is because he is outside of our range of the top 53 tight ends. He's right there at tight end 54. A lot of people have started dropping him over the course of the season, and his rostership has gone down. However, Taysom Hill is now out for the New Orleans Saints. They've kind of learned how to throw to the tight ends somewhat. It's just been Taysom Hill getting a lot of those receptions. And so Foster Moreau is somebody who is going to be getting a lot of snap share for the Saints. And hopefully we can actually see him catching some passes like he did all the way back at the beginning of this year. He had a couple weeks where he did really well, and then he had quite a few weeks where he just put up goose eggs for us. So I'm going to go back to the well of Foster Moreau this week, and I'm going to hope that he doesn't goose egg us here in week 14. Tommy Tremble, I'm just too worried that he's not going to do anything if Jatavion Sanders is back. And Austin Hooper, he is a backup tight end there in New England. I don't really want to invest too much in him, even though he did get lucky last week in terms of catching that touchdown pass. So that's everything that I have for this week. If you have not gone to check it out, go to southharmonff.com. Check out the tools that we have there. Also, check out our sponsor, Manscaped. Use the code SHFF20 at checkout to get 20% off your order. And as always, stay sharp and keep grinding that edge. I'll see you next week.